Hey, back here on Downtown on a Tuesday afternoon. Thanks again to Jason Marsden for joining us and Carrie Haskell for checking in from New Orleans this afternoon. Things go well down there. 19 after the hour. Time for us to talk some football. And to do that, we welcome in our friend Christopher Price of the Boston Globe. Chris, good afternoon.
Hey, Rich, how you been?
I'm doing great, thanks. How about you?
I'm doing well. I'm doing very, very well on this fine Tuesday afternoon.
Boy, oh boy, it is a beautiful day here in Maine. I hope it is down your way as well. My favorite time of year, always made better when the Patriots play well. You were the most optimistic of all the Globe writers when it came to this Patriots season, but did you see that coming on Sunday?
No, I did not. I thought that they had a chance to make it competitive, but I remember saying that they did not possess the gear that the Cincinnati offense, or quite frankly, the Cincinnati defense had. They might be able to reach it at some point in the 2024 season, but I did not see them reaching it at about 1 o'clock on Sunday afternoon, quite frankly. It was an impressive performance. And the other thing, too, you got to take off your sports writer hat, put on a human being hat. This is a group of guys and a coaching staff that has been questioned an awful lot over the spring and the summer. And for them to have a level of validation like they had on Sunday, granted it's one game, but for them to have the level of validation that they had, I think it was pretty cool.
Well, and a lot of things went well, but as you pointed out, it was really the offensive line that was responsible for a lot of their success on Sunday.
Yeah, it really was. And it was interesting, Rich, to kind of have an exchange with people online and talk with fans, and people were saying, well, you know, is the offensive line going to get any better? And there was a lot of doubt. Guys were going to develop over the course of the year. You know, there's no sense in assuming that a guy who, let's take Layden Robinson, the guard, for example, rookie out of Texas A&M, had a good spring, good summer, continued to progress. He's not going to be the same guy he was when he walked, you know, on campus really in April and May. So for him to be able to progress, for guys like Eben Wallace, who was out there on a handful of occasions as the extra tight end, to get better. Darian Lowe, who proved to be a better fit at left tackle than Chuks Okorafor. It all kind of came together very nicely for him. It was not perfect by any means, but the run blocking was more than enough for them to be able to out-physical the Cincinnati Bengals.
Yeah, and I like that jumbo package they ran.
Yeah, it was great, wasn't it? It kind of harkened back to the old days where, you know, whether it was Dan Conley or Nate Solder, they would run that extra offensive lineman out there, and they would have a chance to kind of out-physical the other team and, you know, really kind of seize control of the game and put their print on that ball game and really kind of take control. I think that was the big thing, and the guys talked about it in the locker room after the game, that they wanted to run the football. They wanted to control the tempo of the game. They wanted to do whatever they could do to keep the ball out of the hands of Joe Burrow in that Cincinnati offense. It was kind of a retro game in that aspect of, you know, we saw a lot of teams try and do that against Tom Brady in the New England offense, try and control the tempo, try to take the air out of the football. Look, if this team is going to win games this year, that's how they're going to have to do it. They're not going to be able to outscore a lot of teams. You know, when you're getting up into the 20s and 30s, they're going to have to take the air out of the ball. They're going to have to give the ball to Ramondre Stevenson 20 times a game, or Antonio Gibson, for that matter, and be able to kind of grind out that yardage, work that clock. They were able to do that very successfully on Sunday against Cincinnati.
Well, to me, nothing summarized the performance of that O-line than the hug postgame between David Andrews and Jerod Mayo.
Yeah, that was great, wasn't it? And look, Andrews is just a pro's pro. Just straight up, man. This is a guy, all you need to know about David Andrews is David Andrews did not miss a single snap last year. As bad as things got last year, he didn't miss a single snap. Most important position, or one of the two most important positions on the offensive line. What he brings to the table on a regular basis, both on and off the field, is absolutely invaluable. And to be able to see him have that moment with Jerod Mayo, that was pretty nice.
We're talking with Christopher Price of the Boston Globe here on Downtown. Well, it was great to see so many different people get in the act and come up big, including an unexpected big play by the long snapper. How about that?
Yeah, you know what? It's funny. I have a T-shirt. You know, I'll put in a plug here for some friends of mine. It's a Ray Gun T-shirt. I believe they're out of believe they're out of Iowa, if memory serves, or Missouri. I'm not 100% sure, but they have a whole series of T-shirts that say "Special Teams Wins Games," and you know, I cheer for the punter and I cheer for the kicker. The Patriots, for years and years, Rich, and we've talked about this before, would win. One of the difference makers with them is they would win games on the margins, on special teams, and they were able to do that again on Sunday. They got the great, you know, forced fumble from Joe Cardona. They got the three field goals from Joey Sly. Bryce Behringer had another great ball game. That's the kind of thing you need to see. You know, look, there's not a lot of margin, as well as they played on Sunday, there's not a lot of margin for error with this team. And to be able to take advantage of situations like that will be absolutely paramount for this team moving forward if they want to remain competitive.
Last time you were on, you talked about guys who could step up, and one of those you highlighted was Keon White. Well played, sir.
Yeah, he's the best. He is on a number of levels, too. It's just, this guy continues to get better, and he continues to get better and better. And honestly, and I think we may have even talked about this, that he was one of the guys who made Matthew Judon a little bit expendable. You know, I mean, he wasn't the only reason, but if he continues to perform the way he did on Sunday, so, you know, his ability to get after the passer, his ability to set the edge, you're looking at a guy who has a chance, if he continues to keep the arrow pointed in the right direction, to be a very special defensive ball player. And so, look, 2.5 sacks right out of the gate, able to dominate the edge the way he did. It's going to take a collective. I still believe it's going to take a collective to fill Judon's shoes this season and moving forward. You're going to have to get strong performances out of Uche and Anthony Jennings and Dietrich Wise on the other side. But Keon White is going to be the guy who is primarily responsible for replacing the production that a guy like Matthew Judon had.
Home opener this Sunday. The Seahawks come to town. They're off to a 1-0 start as well. Do we know yet the status of Kenneth Walker II? Will he be good to go?
No, we're not sure yet. We're not 100% sure yet. But this certainly sets up to be a fascinating matchup. I am keeping my fingers crossed, although I think it's a long shot at this point, Rich, that the Seahawks are able to wear their throwback uniforms like they did during Week 1. Maybe the most underrated set of throwback uniforms in the National Football League. I know everyone likes the Chargers and the Dolphins and all that, but the Seahawks throwbacks are absolutely dynamite. But in terms of Walker, we're not 100% sure yet. It's still relatively early in the week. The first injury report, I believe, you know, comes out Wednesday, so we'll know a lot more then.
So, Geno Smith, you never know what you're going to get. He can certainly have a big game. What's the focus of the Patriots' defense against Seattle?
I think it's going to be make Geno try and beat. You know, there are a handful of guys on the offensive side of the ball with Seattle, and you know, we saw a little bit of that on Sunday against Denver. But yeah, I mean, hopefully, if you're a Patriots fan, you look at Gonzalez as being a difference maker in this game. You know, in trying to shut down, you know, trying to shut down the Seattle passing game. Basically, that's what you're looking for. Christian Gonzalez, you're looking for Keon White, you're looking to get pressure up front. But if Christian Gonzalez is able to do what he did on Sunday, keep that moving forward, I think it's going to be an awful tall ask for a guy like Geno Smith to be able to come all the way east, West Coast team, playing a 1 o'clock game on the East Coast. It's traditionally been a challenge for a team to go through that situation, but I think it's going to be an even tougher task on Sunday against the Patriots.
Patriots will, I assume, try to do the same thing, that same formula, centered around that run, control, time of possession, all that. The strength is Seattle defense seems to be a great deal of speed.
Yeah, it really is. And I think, Rich, the important thing to remember here is we're going to get a chance to see the Patriots at least try and be a little bit versatile going into this one. Because, look, if you're the Seattle defense, you get a chance to watch that film. Ramondre Stevenson, 20 carries, 125 yards. You're going to say, all right, well, let's bring an extra guy in the box and let Jacoby Brissett try and beat us. Let's try, you know, let's test those young receivers. Let's put them out there in a situation where they're going to have to make plays, whether it's Pop, whether it's Jalen Polk, whatever the case may be. So it's going to be more of a challenge for the run game. That being said, I think they're going to be able to move the ball a little bit, just enough to, you know, kind of open things up and keep that defense on it. So yeah, it's a chance for Alex Van Pelt to kind of flex his muscles a little bit and kind of maybe wow us with a little bit of a new offensive wrinkle going into this one. Because if you try and do the same thing against Seattle that you did against Cincinnati, you might not be as successful.
For the veterans, guys like David Andrews, who've been around for the best of times, are they beginning to embrace the idea of being underdogs?
Yeah, they are. They really are. One of the things that stood out for me, Rich, was I was lucky enough to head down before the end of the game, and I kind of staked out the area next to the Patriots locker room, and I posted it to Twitter. Just the emotion and the excitement and the enthusiasm that they had coming down that tunnel into the locker room. It's clear they're embracing the role right now of underdogs. You know, I think that they would hope that that would change moving forward, but they were well aware of what people were saying, you know, the things people were saying about them over the course of the spring and the summer. And, you know, I was a guy who wrote 450 stories about the struggles of the offensive line. I was the one, I was one of the guys who doubted them. And I think, again, I think it was, you know, it was a cool moment for them to be able to enjoy a small measure of validation with that win. Now, that being said, they all said this in the locker room, it's just one win. And you need to be able to keep that momentum moving forward. They need to be able to keep, you know, all the good things happening, because this is a relatively young team and they can't get too far out over their skis, and they have to maintain a little perspective, a little bit of understanding that, look, we're in September. We're not in December yet. And the goal is to be cresting and playing your best football at the end of the year.
Well, it was a nice start to the Gerard Mayo era, but the shadow of Bill Belichick is never far away. And I will say, man, and I saw you commented on social media last night, the guy's great on TV. Who knew?
He is. And it was funny. I was talking with my podcast partner, Chris Hogan, about that today. We just posted that. And the fact that Belichick, I think, is really relishing the chance to show another side of himself. You know, the side that only, you know, behind-the-scenes folks know. And, you know, he's only opened up on a couple of occasions that he's light and loose and conversational and can be funny from time to time. I thought that the Manning cast was an excellent way for him to kind of stretch his broadcasting legs a little bit, because it is so informal and it's so conversational. You know, it's not kind of, you know, the occasionally stilted language that you see in the booth, the kind of guarded language that you see from other analysts. It's a chance to kind of let loose a little bit. And I think that was the perfect environment for him. I would love to see some sort of Belichick cast on a semi-regular basis. I know he's going to be with the Manning brothers, you know, from time to time over the course of the year, but hey, let's, you know, steer into this, man. Let's make this a, you know, an every week thing.
Check out Christopher Price's great work in the Boston Globe and the terrific podcast on the Patriots with Chris Hogan. Chris, always a good opportunity for us to talk. Pats, love having you on the show and getting your insight. Thanks so much for being with us this afternoon.
My pleasure, Rich. Take care, and we'll talk again soon.
You got it. Christopher Price of the Boston Globe here on Downtown.